This is Thorne's YouTube channel. Make sure you're tuning in, hit and subscribe.
Right, this is going to be another episode of Reflections, and my guest for this one is going to be Sonny, who is one of the most famous Finnish Counter-Strike players, obviously more recently known for his time in Ents, but I would say obviously the peak of his career came in Mouse Sports, when at one point in time I think they were ranked number two in the world, was I think the peak that they reached. So Sonny, the place I actually want to start off in this interview, and by the way, for anyone who doesn't know, here's on the scale of Finnish English accents, Sonny isn't like, he's not like full Alu slash Kimi Raikkonen slash Rally English. He's not totally on the like Lerpis, like he's more like in the middle. So it's all right, just tune in. If you get lost a bit, don't worry, you'll pick it up as you go. I can understand everything you say, don't worry. So what I want to start off with though, Sonny, is I actually know quite a lot about the Finnish Counter-Strike scene, because obviously a few of my friends for a long time have been in the scene, and also I always knew actually that it has all these extra reasons why it's sort of held back and could be way better. Like obviously a lot of people to this day don't really understand the military service that's mandatory, and there's all sorts of reasons. It's also not a country that has the same kind of sponsorship as the likes of Denmark and Sweden, etc. But so one question I have for you is this though: obviously in Finnish Counter-Strike pretty much always had like one team that was roughly international level, even in the early days of CSGO. I mean obviously you played for the old end squads, but I noticed the time when people actually started calling you a proper top player, you were pretty old actually compared to most people. Like in the early, people probably don't know this, but now like basically if we're talking at the beginning of CSGO, you're already like 20, you're like 21, 22. What was the early day? Does this mean that like were you in the wrong groups? Was the politics keeping on top? Were you just not a top player back then? Did it take you a while to blossom? Why wasn't, like, you think of all these people like Sergey who come in when they're 16 and they're amazing. Why wasn't Sonny like blazing the scene up like that?
Yeah, I mean that's a kind of weird thing, but I feel like in like I wasn't the best teammate back then, that's for sure. Like I have very like active brain. Some people might say that I have ADHD and stuff, but and back then I couldn't seriously handle my emotions. They would blow out, and if I would have a bad day, everybody would know that. And so during my early career and stuff, I did a lot of self reflection, and I still do it. I keep doing it, and I know how important it is. And but yeah, I don't know. There is not like one reason or two reasons why I didn't pop earlier or anything like this. I always kind of knew that I have insane potential, and it's really for me like the personal life is affecting me the most, because I'm this type of person that if there is things wrong or not balanced in my personal life, I cannot focus at anything at all. And yeah, the early days was kind of rough, because in Finland I also think that there was a certain group of people who were always in the same teams, and they were like just way better than anyone else, and we didn't have proper coaching staff or anything back in the days. And even if I compare how we did things in ENCE 2019 compared to Mouse, I felt like in Mouse we were like miles ahead, and we were still like far behind for example what comes to teams like Astralis and Vitality and all these guys. So I just feel like the thoughts about how the game is approached and how to explain certain situations and structure to people is still like so much behind when I compare to like knowledge of people who are playing in international teams, for instance. But my case is, I think it has always been about focus a lot and like knowing where to focus and stuff like this. And yeah, like what comes to most sports and me popping off at some point, I think that I need certain type of people around me so they get the best out of me. And back in the days, I didn't have like enough motivation from myself to push myself on the like next step. Always I needed like for some reason I needed like outside factor or personal motivator or like not a person but like personal motivation, that for example if I'm playing against this guy I really want to show that I'm better. But this is something that obviously later on, and especially now when I'm like almost 28, I'm laughing to myself a bit and thinking like it shouldn't be like this, and I had to do a lot of self-reflection, especially in ENCE and after ENCE, to find the identity as a player and as a person, who I am and what I want and what I want to be. And these are the steps like what I've been struggling in the early career, and even in Mouse, like I didn't have anything balanced. I just played the game, I wanted to be a top 20 player. And I remember this weird feeling when we won ESL, won New York. I stop here, and I'm gonna add that I took everything like way too personally. Every little thing that what came to the game, I was basically, the game was at this point like the most important thing in my life, and yeah, it still is. But now it's part of part of my life. But yeah, like when we won ESL One New York, I felt like something came out of my chest. I felt like a lot of lighter. And I was a bit of afraid of this feeling because I felt that now I have done all the things that I dreamed about. Obviously, there is no major win and stuff, but on a personal level, I couldn't ever imagine myself lifting a trophy like this in front of so many people and doing these things. So I think that was like a big turning point because I was also very burned out at that moment. So I think that, yeah, now obviously it's easier to look back and understand all these details, but I knew at that moment something changed a lot and I lost a lot of hunger to do anything. And it was probably feeling of many factors, but at that moment that changed me like completely.
Sure. So, okay, if we rewind a bit, early on in CSGO, one thing I think is funny, right, is later on when there was all those rumors in 2019, like, oh, Sonny might join Ents. The joke is, it shows you how people don't, or often fans just came along a year or two before. Because my joke was, he's been in Ents three times, guys. Like, you guys don't know this because you don't know the history. So if people don't know, like I talked about in the Naruto interview, Ents has been around for ages if people don't know. They started early CSGO. It's just the problem is, it wasn't until 2018 the team started to get really good and then everyone remembers the 2019 team. So the versions you were in were the ones with people like Naruto. Obviously, Alu was always in the teams, but I always say back then, like the team, the level Ents was at, it's almost like Alu was doing Ents a favour more than like Ents was doing Alu a favour. Like, he could have been in better teams, as you saw. In fact, usually what made Ents go up and down is if Alu had to go and join the international teams again. So when you were in these early teams, like I say, you weren't even necessarily getting, like, people weren't even doing that thing they do on HLTV, like, watch out for this guy, or like, this is the player next year. Like, you weren't even getting that credit. So what were the early years like? Like, it sounds like you were grinding a lot. Like, it sounds like you wanted to make it to the top.
Yeah, like the early days when CSGO came out, like I started with 1.6. I gotta explain this first. I played like 2 years, 4K hours a lot. And then when CSGO came out, I understood that this is like my chance because basically the game is changing. There is like if I can carry my good aim and stuff to this game, and then I have a very good shot to like make it to the level where I want to be. But at the same time, yeah, I'm still like I never was the young talent who is popping out of somewhere and someone is like picking me up to better team or whatever. It was like self-made hard work from day one. Combined with obviously my talent, I've been very successful in other things in life as well. But then I took a long break. I don't remember how long it was, but it was like when I played like a couple of months CSGO with Finnish squad, with Twista and stuff, and I made relations to like Allu and all these other guys. And I knew that I have to like know them so I can get to a better level in Finland and stuff like this. But then I took a break. I lost motivation. I was working and studying a lot. Back then, but then I went to one assembly, some tournament, and then I was like, holy shit, this is actually what I want to do. And then I started playing again. And then I think 2014, when we were in this assembly, Summer River was, I think, Cook, I don't know how to spell his name, Kukli?
Kaylee.
Yeah. This
guy got banned, basically, the French guy got banned.
Yeah, this guy. And I popped like, I remember that I did like 1.36 rating or something, and there were some decent players like Kirby, Asileon, and stuff playing as well. And then I understood that, okay.
You did it against Kirby, he was on the other team.
I don't think that we got to play against him. We only played best
of
one.
Oh, this was just
groups.
The tournament where he did the famous like, cheating clip, you mean?
Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, but it was anyways like I was the highest rated player after him, and then he got called by cheating, and then I was like, what the fuck? I actually did the same numbers as a guy who was cheating. Yeah, so then I was like, okay, I'm gonna try a bit harder now. And then 2015 Rocket, we qualified to this Clutch offline major qualifier, and I played very well against Cloud9, against Nothing, and all these guys who I looked up to a lot. And then basically I got picked up in Ents 2016, first full-time team, and there it started. But I always knew that I have the talent, but I just don't know how to like get it out of me. And I didn't have guys around me or people to talk to, like, what should I do and stuff like this. So, yeah, that's basically how I felt. And in the early days of CSGO, yeah, it was pretty rough in Finland because we never, like, I feel like we never even, like, we didn't know how to get better. We just went to the server and we played. If we won, we won. If we lost, we lost. But we didn't like reflect on how we should approach or what we should do different and stuff. So it was very like individual dependent thing back then.
For me, the part where you started to obviously break out was the key moment was obviously in Penta, which is, so essentially, like Alu and like other players in Finnish history, you had to leave the Finnish scene and go and play in the national team. What I want to ask is this, though. If you look at the timing of when you were last in Ence and then when Penta came along, I notice it's also basically the last period when the Ence was like a small team when Alu was in, and then Alu left and he went to FaZe, and obviously he was... if Alu had stayed in Ence, would you have stayed in Ence? Was that a factor at all?
Yeah, I think I definitely would have stayed because Hallu was obviously a guy who I like looked up to a lot, and like he was in NIP. It was a big honor for us to get him in the Ence team and stuff. But I think that it like I'm very happy that he left because that gave me this personal motivation to kind of be the second Finnish player who can make it kind of. And this was what I was thinking, and I think I would have still stayed in Ence, but they stopped paying a salary and told that basically you can stay, but we cannot afford full time. So then I had to look elsewhere or go back to work. And at that moment, I didn't just want to go back to work. I wanted to play Counter-Strike. And we talked a lot. Like back then, we picked up Alexi B and Arvid, who is now playing in Desiano in Ence. And then we got like IGL Alexi B. We had a lot of fun, and we actually beat Tailu in some tier 3 tournament or tier 5 tournament in Indonesia back then. And it was super fun, and I wanted to like keep working with him and keep playing with him. He was like this type of IGL what I need to be like happy and play good, and at least back then. And then we had a lot of talks with him that if he would join Penta with me and we would build there a roster, but then he wanted to stay in Finland and grow with these other guys who, and then they made Habu with Sergei. So it was very close that we actually started like the international career back then together, but it just didn't go that way back then.
That's interesting you had a connection with Alexi B, because on similar lines, I actually want to ask now to establish in the interview before, obviously later we'll come to some of the drama with Ence and Alu. I want to actually ask, were you friends with Alu earlier in your career? Were you just teammates? Like, I don't know, were you mates? Because everyone assumed, obviously, again, who don't know the Finnish scene, they all just thought like you're Alu's friend, and that's why like you have to be forced into the Ence lineup when everyone like didn't want Alexi B cut or whatever. So were you actually like mates with these guys back then? Were you just teammates? What was the situation in the early days?
With Alu, I think we were friends. Like, we don't have like mutual friends outside of the game, but we went partying together and we spent some time outside of the game together, and we had a lot of fun in events back then. But I wouldn't call us like super close friends, but we were definitely friends.
Fair enough. Right, when you came to this Penta squad, one player who was a teammate of yours, I want to ask about, because he's got obviously his own interest and reputation, is the German player Crystal, who was obviously the in-game leader of this team. So that's actually what I want to ask about, because if people don't know, in the beginning of CSGO, if people don't know, he was actually trying to be like an AWPer or something. He was actually like supposed to be like a star player in the German scene. But obviously later, I would say basically he ended up with sort of like the German Hunden. I mean, I know that now is obviously has different meaning, but you know what I mean? Like, people used to think of him as like, he's the guy who stays at tier two, and then he's the IGL, and then you bring in players that people don't know. He like makes them work in the team. People see the player's good. The player goes to a better team and he's stuck there and he has to get the next player. That's why I have to say he's a bit like the German Hunden, right? Well, is that like the way that characterization is that accurate? Would you describe it as like that when you played with him? Was he a good in-game leader? Give me some thoughts on this guy, because I don't know. I only know the stories, you know.
I think that he is definitely one of the most hardworking guys who is paying attention to so small details what comes to players that most people don't even know to think about them. And he's.
Can you give me like an example just for fun? Can you give me like a little example of what sort of thing you're thinking of?
Okay, I'm just going to make this up because honestly right now I don't remember all this
stuff. No, that's fine, sure.
But yeah, let's say that he's this type of guy that if someone is sitting on top of Hutton Nuke, and then if you throw a certain grenade somewhere, this player would get confused and look elsewhere, and he's the guy who is going to jump out with Zeus and kill him. And this is like sometimes he gets lost in the details a lot, but he's extremely supportive guy and like very nice to be around with. But I think that like the problem for him for not getting better back then or so is that he was like... he have good ideas. Sometimes he gets lost in the details, but it's coming from the confidence part. Like that, I think that his confidence level back then was like close to zero, and that is obviously, holy shit, what was that? That is obviously like huge factor in this game, because most of the guys they are just looking nickname. Okay, I'm playing against this guy. I'm gonna go and fuck him. And then it doesn't matter then how, like, obviously back then the structure and everything was so much on lower level than now, but you will just die, and that's what happened, like, quite a bit. But
Sure.
he's like very smart, but sometimes gets lost in the details, and confidence is the issue, I feel like.
Okay, so then the key moment in Penta, look, just because you weren't in the team for that long, the key moment obviously was you made it to the major, which is a big deal. You qualify for the major, you go there. The only thing is, though, like, if people don't know the story of this, it doesn't go well at the major. Like, what would you say went wrong with this? Because here's the thing, look, on in terms of name value, obviously you weren't a top team that everyone's expected. But I remember I watched the minor. Like, this was a team I actually thought you were sort of like borderline. I could have seen you doing some upsets. And if people don't know, this was the major where obviously it was like Krakow, so there was all crazy results of people going to the playoffs and teams like obviously Immortals and Gambit were in the final. So there must be a story behind what happened at this major. Did it all go to shit or something?
Wait, sorry, I didn't understand the question,
It's
sorry.
it feel it feels like there must be a story behind what happened to Penta at this major. Like, did things go to shit? Was there some problems or something?
Yeah, I mean, it was like, it felt, I mean, it still feels a bit of a surreal how, like, everything happened, because it happened very quickly, but I think that we actually get the best out of, or even more than best out of what we had, because basically we built this roster from tier three players, including me, who are like leftovers from each scene. We didn't have like a superstar or anything. We just
No,
had
no.
five guys from different countries who had a dream, and then we had a very long boot camps before, and we had a lot of fights, like how we should approach the game, and a lot of drama outside of the game and stuff. But at some point, we just like clicked, and we figured out a very good structure outside and inside of the game, and then we just kind of enjoyed the ride, and we didn't expect anything from ourselves, and we just enjoyed playing together at some point. And obviously, there was some lows and stuff in the mood at some times, but when we went to LAN environment, and we had like quite good, like, playbook, what comes to tactics and stuff, and a very like different one than most of teams, and we would get on their face and do certain type of things, and it was our luck that most of the games were best of ones, and then you just win pistols and reset opponent once, and suddenly people are starting to feel a bit afraid when these random kids are coming and getting on their face. But yeah, I think that we just went literally game by game, enjoying what we are doing, having fun outside of the game, and then it happened. There was nothing special. Everything was just meant to be at that moment, I feel like.
It's just as an aside, I'd actually like to ask you on this topic is what is your opinion on boot camps before big events? Because here's one thing that's funny is obviously as a fan you just assume it must just be good for everyone, you practice more, you get but actually I've heard so many stories, mate, where boot camps almost like made teams break up or they boot camp for too long. Like the famous story is like maybe you boot camp for 2 weeks and then the first week's great, but then the second week everyone has all arguments and fights and or you lose every scrim in the second week. Like it can also go really badly, right? It's tricky.
Yeah, definitely is, and it really comes down to like I think the main thing what most players don't understand, that being a professional is still a job, and including me, I'm one of those guys who took everything way too personally, and that's one thing. But I feel like if you just need to figure out with the team what is the best thing for you, and set like certain goals for even each day and each practice, and even outside of the game structure. Like, what do you want to achieve, and what is the like good phase doing it, and building the chemistry is one thing. But yeah, I definitely think that with the boot camps, it can be super messy, and it can even destroy teams. That's what happened to us basically at some point. But it can also be very good, and it's very it has to come from individuals, and basically, especially with introverted, talented guys, it's sometimes hard to get thoughts out and how they actually feel, because everybody needs to have the feeling that they want to be there. Otherwise, it can get tricky.
When you say that you weren't a good teamer early on, like, you're going to have to give me some thoughts on that, because I'll give you an example, right? Even though technically we've never actually seen on camera, like, Nico, like, being horrible to his teammates, just because of that one clip where he said, shut up, like, it just makes it seem easy for people to imagine he is, right? Whereas the joke is, because all the Finnish guys, you guys don't engage with the Western communities, which you all seem super chill and, like, no emotion. People won't believe it. You can, like, were you a rager? What do you mean when you're a bad teammate? What are you thinking of when you say that? What did you have to improve on?
Yeah, I mean, like, the thing with me is that I can be the nicest guy, but I can also be a big moody bitch, and I can make sure that people don't feel good around me. I don't want to do that, and I really need to have people that I can talk to in the team to share thoughts, and I need to be heard, because most of the times when I get thoughts, they are right. And this doesn't mean that other people are wrong, but I need to be heard so I can move on. And this is how I am. And it is not a bad thing; it's a good thing. But back in the days, I just didn't have the, like, let's say, common sense or human eye when to say stuff. Like, for example, if I have a problem, I would like to solve it instantly. I would like to talk about it as long as the thing is done, but some other guy might like to talk about it tomorrow and sleep over it and stuff. So, I've never been the guy who is like telling someone that, holy shit, you're so fucking bad, for example. But I would be the guy who is like saying, this was so bad call, and say it in a very toxic tone or whatever, and then it can affect people a lot.
When you came after this team to join Mouse Sports, and obviously now this is the Mouse Sports team that people remember was really good the next year and accomplished all these things and won trophies and stuff. The funny thing is that fans who are looking backwards on this story are all going to think you must have known this team was great, but they're not going to realize this team was the one that made those players famous. And the joke is, but this was the team that made people think Oscar and Sonny and Rops are all really good. When you actually joined the team, what were your expectations? Like, most of these players, like, it's sort of like just a higher level version of Penta, right? It's all players that are sort of like, don't either like come from a country without their own scene, or they just haven't, they've stuck at that level. Like, no one could know this team's going to number two of the world, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's crazy, but I've had some on a personal level connection with certain players who I've shared moments in outside of the game or playing with, and Oscar is definitely one of them. We played like our EPL relegation with him when he was benched on Mouse, and he played as a stand-in with us in Penta. And then I felt like that we have a very like mutual understanding of certain situations in the game, and this like built trust with each other, especially because we were and still are both very introverted guys. But we found like some weird trust when we played together, and then we just had some chit chats on Steam sometimes that it would be actually nice to play together at some point. But it was never the plan that I'm gonna go to Penta and then to Mouse. And it was a quite obvious decision back then, because I was just thinking that, okay, we have like next major spot with Penta, but Mouse have EPL, ECS and these other leagues that I can actually challenge myself more and get to play on a better level. But it still felt quite bad because we built like very good chemistry in Penta. But the expectations were kind of weird, because I knew that at that moment when I'm going to hop into like a bigger ship, I don't have any control, or like I don't have the trust before I prove myself, and I cannot affect like the gaming stuff what comes to this. So I was a bit of afraid that Mouse actually know what they're getting, because at the beginning I was put in like a pure entry role that I'm just running and doing stuff, and this was definitely the opposite what I played in Penta. I was like the main lurk guy. And so yeah, that like that was my only doubt, that how it's gonna work out, because Rops was playing like my roles, and I had to basically fill someone else's shoes instead of like building the game as we did in Penta together around me and other people. But yeah, I think that was the thing. But and then we only had like 4 or 5 days of practice before 3 tournaments, this DreamHack Masters, where we bomb out in groups instantly, and then we somehow win this ESG Tour Mykonos, and then we would lose to Kogu on E-League. And it was quite like fun that we with 5 days of practice could beat like Gambit and all these teams in Greece in this ESG tournament. So when those three tournaments happened, it was very nice because we basically started the team with having the lowest lows as we can, but also the highest highs. And when you win something as a second tournament, it doesn't matter what's going to happen next because you have the confidence. You just understand that this is what we can do, and we just need to work and find our way to that. And after those tournaments, I think we switched my roles a bit more to being a bit more passive guy, like a kind of lurker, but at the same time taking map control. So and we basically switched roles completely with Chris J on T side, that he's going to be more of the guy who is going to sacrifice for the team. And I'm going to be the guy who is going to make decision and buy space for Oscar and Robs. And that was like the initial game plan. And when we figured that out, I'm very glad that Sergey, our coach back then, trusted me and gave me this chance, because I feel like the story would have been completely different if we didn't make this role, and I wouldn't be the player that I became to be in that team if we didn't do that.
Yes. When he says Sergey, he means LMBT, if people know. The Ukrainian coach was obviously with this team for a long time. Right. One thing I want to know is this. I want to talk a little bit about some of those teammates. And obviously, one I want to talk about is Oscar. That's why I brought him up. Because one thing that shocked me, actually, Sonny, when I was doing a bit of research is I saw in the past you actually said it was Oscar who maybe got you into this team, because, like you said, you had a connection with him. Now, the reason I bring this up is this. Right. I'm just going to say this from my perspective as an outsider. I don't know many of your mouse guys that well. I know like Stiko and Rops a little bit, and I know maybe Chris J, but I don't know like you and I haven't talked to Oscar very much. One thing I do think is a bit dirty is this, Sonny, is I know that technically Nico's the one that started the whole rumour about Oscar, because it was when Oscar joined Mouse Sports in 2016, Nico's the one who just told someone basically, he's a bit weird or whatever, like, yeah. And then famously that story that Richard sold on by the numbers of like, he has all those birds that come when he's streaming, which does make him look like a Disney princess or something. But so my point is, he is a weird guy, but the problem I have is this, mate, is people took that and it became like a whole narrative. You've probably seen it on Reddit, like people just assume like, oh well, that's the reason he can never be in a top team, or like, well of course you'd have to replace him, he's just like a weird guy. And I think when they hear weird, they think like, you know, like he's an arsehole, or he's like a really like saying all inappropriate things, whereas as far as I can tell, he seems like a totally, he's not a malicious guy at all, as far as I can tell. He's only weird in the sense that he's way older than everyone, he's had a very different career because he spent all those years grinding in fucking like Czech Republic or something. And then on top of that, here's the part I think's the dirtiest. When everyone says, oh, but he doesn't want to go to all the events, guys, he's in Mouse Sports. Like, a topic we're going to talk about in a minute is, if you're in Mouse Sports, the joke is they just sign you up to every LAN in the world and you just go. Like, there's not like, it's not like FaZe, like, do we want to go to this LAN? Like, you're in Mouse Sports, mate, they pay you the money and you just go to all the LANs that year. So also, of all the teams, like, that is the team where you just make you travel all the time, and he has a family. So give me some thoughts on this. Give me like the, now with years later, give me like the perspective on Oscar. Like, what, like, there must be some aspects where it's true. It must be hard to be his teammate in some degrees, but give me your take on it. What's the legit take?
Yeah, so I'm gonna be completely honest and open about it, and this is my opinion and my thoughts only, so it's not the only truth again. So Tommy, he's like the sweetest guy in the world outside of the game and also in the game, but he's also like very moody. You can definitely see and hear his emotions through the like body language and everything. And the thing with him is that I think that he's been on the same level individually for like last 10 years.
Oh, he's insane, like, me.
Yeah. So that is crazy to me. Like that, like he's still exactly the same guy who he was as a player than I played with him last time.
Dude, people think I'm exaggerating because they think I just like this guy. They don't know. Like, I saw this guy play in 1.6 when he couldn't be in the top. No joke. The eye test on this player, he's actually one of the most skilled players I've ever seen. He's mega unique.
Yeah. Yeah, and his intuition is like so high that like I learned a lot from him, and I look very much up to him still today. But I think that like why there is these rumors that people say that he's weird or toxic teammate or whatever is that as well. I think it's a bit similar to Simple or Nico at certain aspects, that they just understand so much more and faster about the game than rest of the guys. And then when they see something what they think is stupid, it is coming in some weird tone what leaves questions to people or teammates sometimes.
Like, they think it should be obvious to you guys what you're not doing.
Yeah, exactly. Because this is like, it is how he is. He's just like better than most of people. And he's like, he's faster and his talent is just way higher. So as a human, he kind of expects the same from everyone because we just reflect on like how we feel.
Yeah, sure.
And, And that is like what is coming, like what can come out, especially during the bad days or bad moments. But I wouldn't ever call him a toxic teammate for sure. Not like he's probably the funniest guy that I have ever met in my life. And it's just like one sound what he's making at some point, everyone is laughing. But obviously, like it's going also downside that if he have a very bad day, then he's a bit more silent, and everybody knows that he's not feeling it. But it's just something that I think that is a personal matter, or like that's how some people are. And some people call them weird, but I call them talents and or artist. I think Oscar is like an artist type of guy, very very much. And you just need to like understand him, and everything is fine. He's not toxic at all.
I even get what you mean by that when you say like artists, because I also think that's the sort of player, because I've talked about, like I said, like Staker in the team. I always got the vibe in that team because people know famously, like the famous thing about Oscar, obviously in FPL, was like if he got annoyed when he was AWP and he would just give someone else the AWP. That was the famous thing, right? That he didn't want AWP anymore, even though he's, by the way, one of the best AWPers like ever in CSGO history. So like I remember talking to Staker and he basically told me it was like, it's not like you micro Oscar, it's the opposite. It's more like you have to like set up everything else so it's comfortable. And then when you create the space that he can do what he's going to do, then he'll just be amazing and take over the game. So he said the weird thing is, it's like if you set him up right, it's like you have Simple on your team. But at the same time, you can't just like do nothing and just think he's just gonna like, because that's the difference between a lot of the superstars. They do just do whatever they want, no matter what. They have super conflict guys. So it feels like maybe there's like a balance you have to strike there.
Yeah, exactly. And what comes to like Oscar, for example, is that he like I can see that he sees when we are playing against teams and when we were playing against teams which have different type of structure and stuff. He sees the like structure in his head in some sort of a puzzle, and he knows how to operate in it. But the pro like his pro problem was a bit that he need to understand that sometimes. I think he's doing it now, but back then he didn't understand always that like we need to have the structure so it enables him to be the better player who everyone needs and wants to see. And that is, I think that. I don't know anything about Navi, but I think that Simple find like the extreme peak of his career, which is happening right now, because he have guys around him who know how to set him up, and he's gonna deliver, and he have the freedom in the structure. So it's like I think that is also why some people might think that he was weird or toxic because he didn't follow the plan or whatever, but he just understands more. And when the intuition kicks in a high adrenaline moments, you cannot explain yourself. You just have to follow it. But yeah, that's the case with him.
When you won, as you said, the Mykonos tournament, the ESG one, which was very soon into joining Mousesports, it's one of those ones I always think's weird if you're a pro, because in the server, like if you just look at the demos, it could have been any big event. Like you, like SK Gaming was there, you didn't play them, sure. Like you beat Team Liquid in the final, who was pretty good, as you say. Gambit, who'd won the major, was there. Big Climate, there was all these teams that, like on paper, it looks good. The problem was it was a weird event because if people don't know, kind of like how they marketed that event to the players to get people like SK and Virtus Pro to go, was they sort of told them like it's a half holiday, didn't they? Because you were like sort of everyone was in those chalets and we were all in Mykonos. It was like when you're playing, you know, you play properly, but then when you're not, it's sort of like supposed to be a party around a pool. So basically the question is this: on paper, that's like the biggest tournament you've won in your career at this point in time. You're beating big teams. Like, look, dude, if you place ahead of SK Gaming with ColdZera and those, that's a big moment in your career. But at the same time, it's not quite as cool when you're just like next to a pool, where it's not a stage at the same way, it's not lifting a massive trophy. Like, that's what I want to ask, is like, how do you judge it? Because on one hand, it is an accomplishment, but it's not quite as epic as the rest of esports, is it?
Yeah, I agree with everything you there, like everything what you said. I don't have anything to add there, but I just want to tell that it's a bit of a weird like to start semi-final when like 5 minutes before you see Lobanyika carrying ropes like this next to
True.
pool.
Oh,
You're
yes. True.
like how am I like supposed to be mentally prepared in some fighting mode to beat some of the best teams in the world. But yeah, like I'm still very happy that it happened, because I feel like that atmosphere and everything gave us relaxation to kind of just play the game and be able to make those comebacks, because I think that event was one of the biggest factors why we became so good, because we built the confidence there and we did some insane comebacks. We would lose like Train Cities at 3-12 a couple of times or something like this, and then come back on T side and win. So yeah, I think that, yeah, I wouldn't personally like to play in that kind of tournaments anymore. It would definitely feel much more like a vacation, but it was a very nice change. But it didn't definitely feel like you're in some serious tournament.
Because I almost feel like the rise of mouse sports, like you actually got a little bit underrated in this era, because obviously then before the end of the year, you had that amazing ECS finals. But here's the problem again, dude. It's another like holiday vacation thing where like everyone's in Mexico now, in like Cancun, like, hey. And the problem is, dude, no one remembers that final because it was before the Boston Major. No one remembers it. But basically, I'll tell people the story. Like, this was a tournament, by the way, that had like a whole bunch of top teams out, and mouse sports not only finished second, but this is probably one of the closest games FaZe ever won in their whole fucking careers, mate. Like, you could have won every map in this series. Like, this must have been you must have thought you should have won this game.
Yeah, man, for sure. Like, I think, but the thing with me is that I know that some things always happen on the other side as well. So I'm sad that we couldn't win it, but we had the chances. We were not ready to do that yet.
Okay, because I always thought this angle, the way you know people don't remember it, is when you came to the major afterwards and you played against the same FaZe clan and obviously you had that epic nuke game. I always thought that must have been in the back of your heads, like, we've just lost all these fucking close games. Then they won that bullshit one with that, like, Nico win when he comes through the ball. I'm like, that must have felt like a fucking, like, a replay of the last final.
yeah. But the thing, I'm not sure how everyone else felt back then, but like when we looked at replay and stuff, there was the chances for us that if we would play it again, even now with 0 hours, probably the players would just make the right decision instead of like choosing the worst one. And I think in that final, in the Mirage game, I felt that everyone else is so off than me. Like, or not, they were definitely not playing on their peak level, like Robs and Oscar. They were a bit silent there and like not definitely playing at their best. And then obviously I had one of the best maps of my career, so that helped us. But it's hard to remember all the details, but I think in the major, at least for myself, I didn't have anything at the back of my head. I just, at that moment, I had hit some weird Zen mode at that. I'm just playing the game. I don't think about anything else. I'm in the game and I'm doing what I'm doing.
But was this your player peak, do you think, individually, this era?
I think it's still coming at some point. Okay. It feels weird. It feels weird because, like, I think that is the most enjoyable moments when I was what I ever had in the game. And I think that enabled me to play so good. And like now, if I start watching my highlights, for example, I don't even think that I look so crispy or whatever. I'm just feeling it and hitting the right spots at the right time. And you could call it peak probably, but I don't feel that I was any better back then than I am now or whatever. I just think that I enjoyed the game and I had focus only in the game at that moment.
Because it's interesting you say that from Penta, you saw yourself more as like the Rop style lurker, because actually I would say in Mouse, because it's the team that made you really famous, this is actually what people now think your style of play is, what you did in Mouse. That's, in fact, that's when you were coming to Ents, that's what everyone assumed your role would be, essentially like second into the site or something like. Does that mean that was something where you've just become good at that over the years? If you have the choice, like if you were making a team tomorrow, would you be a lurker again? Are you just an entry player now? How do you think of yourself and your role in Counter-Strike?
No, nowadays the thing is different. I would pick up IGL and ask him, what kind of team do you need and what kind of player you want me to be? Because the thing with
you'll just fill the spot you need, right? I see.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think that I became somehow so supportive guy that like I never even had the hunger to be like the best player in the world. But I enjoy the moments together in this game and I have a bit of a similar quality to Oscar that I understand the game very well, like, and how people react in the game within the structure and how certain players play. Like, just an example, when 2018 we mostly played against same top 10 teams in each tournament. So then my coach would tell me that, okay, you're playing against this guy in this spot. It's very important that you do research and you see how he plays, because our structure was like actually, it was very free, and some people think that we just played FPL, but we actually had a structure. But it was just completely different to enable and to enable certain qualities in me, Oscar and Robs. But like I took it very personally, so I studied all of Mazer, I studied Nico a lot, I studied Coldzera and Fer a lot, and my job basically was to destroy confidence my job was to not enable opponent's key factor to pop off, kind of. That's how I took it. And then every time when, for example, there was some chaotic round happening and I would kill Ferb and he was doing some insane lurk or whatever, I would take it as a personal big win and build my confidence even more. So I was like my role or identity as a player is not like one certain role or whatever. It's really like what the team needs, and I can do it better than anyone, but someone need to tell me what to do, because I'm also same as Crystal. I get lost in the details, and if I don't trust my team, I can't do anything. Like, then I'm the worst bot that you can have. I'm thinking about weird stuff and people will come and kill me.
Since you mentioned LMBT, give me some thoughts on him then, because I actually think if you look at his career, he's never really gotten like a lot of fame as a coach. But if you look at the teams he's on, he must be pretty underrated. Like pretty much every team he's on is good.
Yeah, I mean, I think the case with him is that he also never got to work with the best talents, and he was working in low budget teams a lot. And I think that Mouse affected him in a bit in a bad way. In a matter of fact, that when we actually kind of popped through, it was the first time for me, like for me and the whole team, like every individual, it was the first time that we are actually on tier one level. Obviously, Oscar had his peaks and beat some tier one teams before, but on a consistent note, that we're
Yeah, of
hitting
course.
playoffs all the time, and we are capable of winning some tournaments. So I think that we kinda, because we actually had like sometimes even a month or two that we didn't have just time to practice, because every time when we're home, we are playing EPL or ECS online, and then we need to travel to another three tournaments in a row. So I think that we actually at some point forgot why we got here. And then I think that Sergey tried to carry like the Mouse Sports swag or whatever to other teams, and it just don't work with certain individuals. And I think that he is also like very stubborn person, but also very listening. But when you're from CIS and you have worked in 1.6 with some big characters, and his type of coaching model doesn't work with most of people, and I mean some people. But I think that he also has grown a lot, and his comfort zone is way more bigger, and that's why we basically work together again, because we are me, Sergey, and Oscar. We are so different personalities outside of the game that like if we wouldn't met, we would probably hate each other. But then
Okay.
somehow, like if we wouldn't ever have met and we would have a conversation in bar, we would probably like just be silent and just leave two different directions. But then I feel like we learn a lot from each other's qualities, and we are not afraid of pointing out the worst parts of our personalities. And that's like very heartwarming for me, and a big motivation to make it work one more time.
Right, one of the championships, because it is actually the one that got Mouse to the top ranking in the world, was of course the Star Series Season 4 Championship, which I will say this, it's a bit like the ultimate version of what I said about with the Mykonos tournament, because the thing about all the Star Series tournaments was they always usually at this period had the really good teams. Like this one was super stacked, if people don't know. It's probably actually one of the hardest tournaments ever to win because it was a Swiss system best of three with all the best teams in the world. I'm talking about everyone. And so like to win this must be mental. But at the same time, this one unfortunately was one where the final was still just in like the cyber arena. It wasn't in like, you know, one of those fucking proper things. So like that's one of those ones where it's like it's not the same as winning the major, but on paper it sort of is. Like you're beating all the teams that are behind the major, so winning this one must have been a big deal.
Yeah, that was the most important tournament win of my career, and the most like thing that if I'm ever dreaming about something, I'm dreaming about that, because if I could have changed one thing, was that we would have met FaZe in semis or something. I don't remember who they lost to, but they were like the last
They lost to
team.
Navi. Yeah.
They were the last team that we kind of didn't beat. Yeah, we had some like very big problems against SK back then, and also Cloud9. They were like, I felt like the Cloud9 roster back then was very explosive, and they were like doing our stuff but better. So when we beat them as well, I think that the whole team's confidence got much better. And when I like personally, when I look back, you could always say that okay, we won these and these teams in best of ones. But then when you do it on best of three and play so many maps in a row on LAN, it felt amazing. And obviously, I'm sad that I didn't get the MVP, because I still have none. but simple deserve it. And
so it's a bit hard to argue with that one, though, because that was the other question I was going to ask. Is like, look, mate, to even win that final, because I watched that final live, and it was like, mate, I've even said, even though he lost that final, that might be the best performance anyone individually's ever played. He was just fucking insane, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was like the worst part back then was that I think that Simple still takes everything very personally, and like when he wants something, he's gonna get it, especially when he's feeling it, and you can't do anything about it. It doesn't matter because he's just on, like, he's just better. And the hard part was there that we felt that we are a better team, but when Simple started to be in the right spot every time, doing like a multi kill or hit some insane shot, you start to question everything, because like you just become like afraid of him, basically. And then you have it in your head that maybe he's here or maybe he's there, and then you don't focus on the normal stuff what you usually do, and then something happens. But I think it was our luck that Zeus also had like very bad games, so there was at least some balance.
Exactly. Yeah. That's like the old joke, like, you know, God gives, God takes away. It's like, even now, yeah, for that one, made it fair. So, okay, yeah, Here's a question I have is, I alluded to it earlier, but one of the only things that's a downside of when a team like this gets to the top, because it's happened obviously with the recent end squad with the international team, is when in the rankings, the team goes to like top two, top three, to a fan, they're like, right, perfect. You're like the third best team in the world. Like, there's no reason any of you should leave the team. So it's like, bro, there's the business world as well. Like, Mousesports isn't FaZe Clan. Like, they're not all getting 30K a month. Like, remember, this is a team that when they formed like 6 months earlier, like, just making top in a major would be cool. So that's the one thing I've always thought's a bit rough in Counter-Strike, is sometimes you can obviously be on the team that like actually you're way overperforming what like the business angle would say. So I heard back in the day in this era, listen, from the years later, they definitely stepped up the level, and people like Rops, I know, definitely were getting paid by the end in the last few years, got proper salaries and stuff. I've heard in this era though, you guys used to make seriously like a fourth or like a third of what those big teams made. Is this accurate?
Yeah, at the beginning it was like I'm not sure if it's like okay to talk about numbers, but
it was less than 10k I heard put out with. So let's just say
yeah. But like when we made it to like major playoffs for the first time, and we already had some like proof that we are good, then the lucky thing for us as a squad was that basically this is something that it's also very stupid by Mousesports that they had like Rob's, Oscar, and the rest of the team having same length contracts, because their contracts would run out, and then we just wanted to be competitive with the other guys who we are beating constantly when it comes to the salary, and their contracts were running out, so we were in a very good spot to kind of push them to pay us better.
Like block negotiate, basically, all get together and say we have to sign off. Yeah, exactly.
And basically one stupid thing what I did back then, but I need to take credit now later on, is that I got offered like a shit ton of money to sign a longer contract or re-sign, because I had also very low contract. I think I had very, like, quite low contract, but obviously I didn't have any reason to have a big contract when I joined. I was just a like 23
years. Just gambling on you. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And but then like I got offered with Robs to get like a lot more salary than rest of the guys, but then we basically were not professionals in this case, because then we agreed with the team that it's not gonna be nice if I'm going to earn like 3 times more or 4 times more than you, and you're sitting next to me and doing the same job.
It sounds funny if you say it in an interview though, mate, because I think people are thinking of football. It's totally logical that like the star player makes more, you know. But I get what you mean though. In Counter-Strike, it was more back then the era of like we all make the same money sort of vibe, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm happy that it's not that anymore, because it's just the fact that if you're Simple or even close to Simple or whatever, and your social media and everything, your value to the organization is much higher than someone else. So yeah, and you can definitely say that back then, like, from organization perspective, Rob's, Oscar, and Sunny are more valuable than Christian and Stiko, what comes to, like, and it's just not natural, and even though we're doing same amount of work. But yeah, I wasn't professional in that way, so basically I went down quite a bit with my salary, so everyone can get the same. And I did it because I just knew that it's just better for the environment, and it's not going to be nice for me to like do high five as I did a week ago, knowing the fact that these guys are making so much less.
Right, obviously, at some point in time, like an anchor point that we're going to get to, was obviously the face at Major, which isn't a good part of the story. But just before that, there was the period where the team was still a top team, but it's like you just got hit, you just kept hitting the semi-finals every time. And it's like you play a good game, you play the team that wins the tournament, but you weren't winning the tournaments anymore, right? Even though, as I just said, if we keep the expectations relative, being where you are, like even being in semi-finals, but there was a great performance for this team and where it was coming from. But the problem is, if you've won tournaments, and especially if you've been that close to beating people, or as you say, eventually you've beaten most of the top teams, you sort of feel like we should win now, right? This should be the time we stack trophies, we're winning a bunch of them. So even though to maybe a fan, they would think it's cool to come to semi-finals, I'm sure it caused some issues in the team, right? That you weren't getting the finals anymore, you weren't winning. I'm sure it was causing some problems.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that we kind of destroyed ourselves in that team. Like, we were the reason why we couldn't perform better. And it's pretty obvious now when you think about it. Like, we are kids who are enjoying the time playing tournaments. We are kids who are getting a lot of money. We are kids who do what we love and we win. But then when the feeling of winning stops, you want more, but then you don't know how to get there. And this is the problem, because we played a bit of too much tournaments and officials, and we didn't practice, as I mentioned before. There was there was some months that we didn't practice at all, or it would be like one day, and then we would even in tournaments, Sergey would watch demos at night and come with a game plan with Chris J, and we could even switch like strats on fly that we never run before. And then when you have different opinions in the team and whatever, these are bringing problems, because then when you stop losing, if you don't have a way that everyone believes that what we should do, then people start to suggest, and then these wrong thoughts are coming to your head. And these are like very big lessons for life, what we experienced there. Because it's just natural that before we became good, we practiced like a lot. Like, we had 2 to 3 months after this E-League where we lost in groups after ESG. We practiced like super hard, and we were super hungry in each single practice to get better. And then we start the year with like a long boot camp in Mouse Sports office, and we do like extra long days, 10 to 12 hours, and we practice, and we get routine. But then slowly, if you don't shape the routine or create new one, it's just slowly fading away, and your individual performance is as well going a bit down. And then it's just natural process that if you don't play, you get worse. And this is what happened to us, but we just kept playing more tournaments instead of having like a proper break and practice. And that is the problem for us, because then we started pointing fingers. It was just easy. Like, we had some tournaments where we lost in semis to Navi. I think it was the other Star Series or something.
Yep.
We started to have like arguments between, between rounds in the game. And this didn't happen too much before, but we started to have like basically that coach and IGL would have an argument, and then everyone else gets involved, and we might end up playing next round without having even a plan. And then, like as a naive individual who don't know the reason why these things are happening or whatever, you start pointing out fingers, what are the problems. And I think that what we should have done now is that we have a break. We basically chill a bit outside of the game, come back, start practicing, go to next tournament, and enjoy the game again. But what we did, we kick Stiko, and we bring a Snacks in, who is like the completely opposite type of player in these positions where Stiko played. And we were so like used to having this supportive guy there, who is always like jumping angle to Oscar, who is always throwing a flash or dropping AK to me or whatever. But then when you have another like star player, It got very tricky, because we still didn't have practice with him. We had only like less than a week when he joined, and the expectation was, okay, we were in semis, we bring good player, we need to win next. So it was just completely naive and stupid, to be honest. And it was sad that we didn't realize it.
By the way, when you made this team, because I've heard you comment on this in the past, that's one of the things you said is that you basically, if you could go back in time, you use Snacks in totally the wrong role. I mean, if people think historically, Snacks probably one of the most famous fucking lurkers of all time, like obviously Virtus Pro. So, like, the joke is, if anything, he should have been doing like Robson's spots or something, whereas instead, you put him instead of Stakeholder, who at this point in his career was like a hard support, almost like Dota, where you get no resources and you just do everything for the team, right? So, like, there was obviously a mismatch there, right? By the way, what I want to ask is not only with how the team set up, but how did Snacks take it? Like, was he fine doing these roles? Did he just accept it? What was the dynamic there?
Yeah, so basically we had this talk like about the roles and stuff, and then it was natural to put me to be like the new Stiko and put Snacks to be in the star, like star spots, but Rob's role would never change. He this guy is just so special that it doesn't matter who is playing with his, like he just need to play, you need to let him do his stuff. And but then when the problem also was that we were so burnt out that we expect everything to be perfect fast, and we had so less time that we decided that it's easier for us if we don't change anything, and that Snacks would just fill the spots from for now, and then we would fix everything when we have time. But then when there was no result and the communication level got way more worse without having Martin with proper English and having a rusty Snacks coming after like the last days of VP. So then some individuals in the team really wanted to get rid of him, and that was I got so tilted. Tilted back then. I remember I was just face palming after some tournament when I was listening to this talk that okay, we're gonna kick this guy and bring this guy back, and I'm thinking like, how the fuck, like what the fuck is happening, seriously? And yeah, I think that like what we should have done is that we put Snacks, we let him pick his role, we build the structure around him and Oscar, and then we have me and Robs on the sides, and that is how it should have been. But we didn't have time, and then every other factor basically did the worst thing what we could have done. So don't give him chance, don't even give him a proper chance, kick him and get Martin back. But I think Snacks understood what's going on, and he took it like very well, to be honest. And I have still pretty good relation with him, we can still chat, and I don't know if the rest of the guys did, but I spoke a lot with him after this thing happened, and we like cleared the air and everything. And I really respect this guy.
But it was obviously you, famously, in the HLTV interview, who said the line that defined this whole era of when Snacks was in and then Stiko wasn't, because you famously said in an interview that one thing that you noticed once Stiko left the team was that he was adding to the communication, basically, of how the team worked. Now, I will say, I think people took that too extreme. They took that like, they made it sound like Snacks just sat silently. Whereas I took it more like this, like, in teams, one thing, first of all, as usual, is that there's a famous saying in English, you don't know what you've got until it's gone. Like, it's only when someone leaves it, you notice what they were bringing sometimes. And then in this particular case, I actually saw it as more of a subtle point. It's not like Stiko was like the fucking IGL. It's more like in conversations, like I do this myself because obviously my job as a talk show host, interviewer, you have to be able to notice when like someone says something and the other guy's like, yeah, okay, but you can tell he doesn't quite understand, like, oh, you've missed like part of it. Like, what he means is do it like this. Like, it was something like this along the lines, because I get the vibe, obviously, the angle people are forgetting in mouse spots is everyone's speaking in their second language. People aren't native English speakers. You're all doing it second language. So famously, I know from teams like FaZe, when you're in those teams, it's tricky. And obviously, like, the timing of how long it takes people to say something, or if sometimes people just, they understand, but they don't say something. I'm sure the comms were tricky in this team. So can you give us some thoughts on that topic?
What was the topic again?
Basically, the idea of, like, what did Stiko add to the comms, or what were the issues of having comms in, like, an international team in this sense?
Yeah, okay.
It seems like that is a big deal, because obviously people know on paper sometimes these teams look great, but they're not very good in the server.
Yeah, exactly. So what people tend to forget or don't even understand at first place is that CS is like probably, at least from my experience, from comparing to traditional sports, the most social game, because you're talking with your teammates 8 hours a day, and the communication is like literally key to success. You don't see your teammate's screen, you don't see what's happening, you don't hear what he's hearing. So everything has to come with communication. And it's just natural for human that if you're feeling good and confident, you're playing better and you're enjoying your time. But then if the tone, for example, of some guy is always a negative one and people react it, then it's slowly you start building like negative feelings. So communication is the thing that everybody should work on all the time. outside of the game of service. We don't know what's happening in other people's heads, right? So we just need to, communication is the key to success. And Martin, the thing is that he's like very calm, very, very clear with his communication. And I think that his presence in that team was like something that we didn't even understand how important it is for rest of us, because he's like stable, calm guy, and we have like me who is moody, we have Oscar who is moody. So if you're like two out of the three core players are kind of like emotional guys, then it's very important that the rest of the team is stable. And then we had Chris who would just explode sometimes. So Martin's presence was like, the numbers were like 50% of it, but the rest of it was like, he was bringing the team, it was stable point, and it is like, exactly what you said.
By the way, one thing I didn't ask about earlier, so just in the timeline, it was going to be a bit off here, but I should ask this because I actually also found this when I did my research. I found that there was a cool story you actually told HLTV where basically you just said it like this. You said it was 50-50 as to whether you made a team for Penta, so you obviously did do that, or instead if you went and made a Dignitas team that would have been you, Jacob, Fox and Rubino, which is like, what? Like, that sounds like that's a pretty interesting team. By the way, the joke is that you could almost make that team now, but like that, you really do think like, what would happen, what would history be like if you went and made that team instead? Because it said, hey, like, it's one of those ones you think back on sometimes, right? Like, what if I did?
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting to think about it, but I don't remember anymore why I decided Penta instead of them, because on paper that team is just way
it's better than, yeah, it's, and like, wouldn't you be like the star player of this team? Wouldn't this be like the way to become really famous?
So I have no idea, but I guess I had some gut feeling or something that this is the way. I don't know, but one factor probably was that like Penta was like, they showed how much they want to work with me, and this meant a lot because it was like first international team, and I'm basically in my head I'm leaving Finland to play in international team, so it was like they knew how to handle me, and this gave me confidence because I think that's one of the reasons, but I don't know, like, it's so hard to think what happened, because we also beat them in the minor, I think, which was like the kind
of
the show.
Yes, we did, yes.
Yeah, and I remember doing 30 bomb, and I took it personally. Back then, everything was so personal. I remember that game on Overpass. It felt super nice beating them. But I think that one other factor back then was that I'm a very sensitive person, and I'm very like emotionally connected to everything what I do. And I felt that something might go wrong in this team. Like I just had this feeling that something might go wrong. I didn't know what, but that's how I felt. And I wanted to have rather guys who are in a similar spot than me, that you don't have any other choice. So you are going to give 120% because rest of the, like JKM and all those guys, I felt that they had already achieved some stuff, and I wouldn't be heard probably as much as the rest of the guys. So I think that these are probably the reasons. I cannot recall completely.
As I said before, obviously now we have to talk about the dreadful Face It Major, which basically like the team bombed out of, and it's actually a big part of why, even though you win ESL New York, eventually Snacks is kicked out the team. Like, obviously the team was on its fucking warning at that point in time, because it's a major, like, it's a big deal to either do something big or do something bad at a major, right? If I go and look back and I look now who you played at the major, it's not like you had the easiest run. You definitely got some like teams that were competent, etc., but as I said, this team was like a top four team in the world. You were supposed to be a playoff team. So give me the story, what happened at this tournament, because this was the one where, I mean, obviously I'm sure you lost after this.
You mean the Face It Major London?
Yes.
I think that that is so weird story. Like it was right after the player break, I think, and we were supposed to have like at this moment we still didn't have more than probably than 6 days of practice with Snacks when we were coming back from player break. And we were supposed to start at the boot camp at Mouse Office, prepare 12-hour days, and then play the major, because we needed still to have the break. And obviously, this amount of time is just not enough. even doesn't matter how good you are, when you don't, when you didn't even build a structure with Snacks, he didn't even know all the strats, I think. And yeah, we come back, and then something happened in Snacks' personal life on the airport or something, and he couldn't come to the boot camp during the first 2 days. So then Oscar also didn't want to come to practice only with
With just four people, yeah, sure.
Yeah, with four people. And so then we ended up like being there only Chris, me, and Robs. And we were wondering, like, we were so tilted because we didn't have enough day off still coming to this season, and we couldn't start properly, and we wanted to boot camp, but we couldn't. So we went to this major, if I remember correctly, I don't remember how many days exactly, but then we had on like 3 or 4 days boot camp, and we couldn't still like fix anything properly for this major. So we go there with like very limited amount of time, and then 3 best of 1 games, and we had high pressure from ourselves and also from Mouse Sports that you need to do something now, and we've just brought this guy for us a shit ton of money, and we've done nothing so far. So there was like a lot of pressure, and then very bad mood because we didn't have the boot camp, and we had in our heads that we need to play good, otherwise we are done or something like this. At least I had. And then on a personal level, I also don't know what happened, but I started like running a lot on 2018. So in this tournament, I couldn't feel my right leg; like I couldn't hold my shoe even up. It was hurting so much. So,
as in you injured yourself, like you did too much or something?
Yeah, I exercised too much. I was running like 10 kilometers almost daily. And then at this tournament, like my legs had said GG, and I couldn't like move my toes and whatever. So I was like limping all over the place and thinking like, okay, I'm mentally destroyed, and I'm also physically destroyed now. So it was so weird that I could still play decent, to be honest.
This video was kindly supported by Kill Your Inner Loser, Ahmed Haju, Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Paul Villa, Travis Goff, Adam Ux, Animosity, Bot Pounder 420, Hades, Jensen Gore, Kovacevic, Piercy, Tobias Bernasconi, Tosh, Toucan, and as always, special thanks goes out to Jerky's Minion. Do you want to suggest a topic or a guest for my shows? Would you like to ask a question in my Patreon AMA? Maybe you want teasers, find out who the next Reflections guests are or upcoming talk show guests. Do you want to take part in one of those long donator discussions with me? Well, if any of the above or more sound interesting to you, put your money where your mouth is. Join the Skrilluminati today via the Patreon link in the description box below.